Checking to make sure.
Yeah, I think I can hear myself.
I'm hearing things.
Oh, cool. It sounds great. It's just like we're on the radio or something.
Mm-hmm. Now it's ready.
Hello, and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dedis, and in the other chair, for the first time in a long time,
is Brandon Rhodes.
Holy shit.
Yep, and we are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
Good to see you again, man. I mean, we live together, so it's not like we don't see each other, but also it's good to see you in that chair.
Between the mics.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Where are we? We're the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally, with a global perspective, and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Oh, man, I am out of it. We're covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, and alternative transportation, arts, culture, communications, and the internet, diasporatic Saturnalia, all kinds of good things.
That's right, yeah. And we're drinking some beer. We're also in the studio with Corey Poole from the Northwest Skate Coalition, is that right?
Northwest Skate Coalition, yeah, you got
excellent.
It.
Excellent, yeah. Corey Poole, and you were actually, I think, didn't you reach out to me before I emailed you?
Yeah, I just needed to be on the show.
Which is awesome, yeah, yeah. Because I had, you were a reference from Michael Anderson from Portland Afoot, and he said, this guy is super cool, you should talk to him. And so you were on my short list, and then I got an email from you before I even had a chance to email you, and you said, hey, let's do this.
This is great.
So thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Also, Billy Miner, also part of the Northwest Skate Coalition, I assume?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So thank you for joining us, both of you.
Yeah,
and what are you drinking, Corey? You've got
This is a Reed's ginger brew.
Is it the premium or the standard?
I don't think so.
That's cool. Reed's is one of the better ginger brews that you can get.
It is. You know, Cock and Bowl is
favorite,
but it's just hard to find.
Yeah, Cock and Bowl. I think I got at the. It's fun to say too. Got it at the Horse Brass, which is what they would serve as kind of one of their NA options. It was pretty good.
I live about 2 blocks from there, so yeah.
That's a great spot.
Yeah.
Just had fish and chips there 20 minutes ago.
Really?
Fish and chips is ridiculously good.
Yeah. I've heard they're kind of legendary for that, right?
Yeah. Completely worth it.
Yeah. And when I turned of drinking age and was able to go to public establishments, that was one of the first places I went to actually get a pint of something great.
Yeah,
so that
would have been when you couldn't see the back wall either. Right,
right. It was full of smoke and carcinogens.
Yeah, I tried playing darts, but I could never see the board.
Guys trying to get to the loo back there, they're assaulted by the darts.
Yeah, I kind of miss that atmosphere. I know that for workers' health, which I believe is one of the biggest reasons that they banned indoor smoking in Oregon, it was a toxic situation for them. And for anyone who didn't smoke, it was less exciting than for those who did. But I do miss the atmosphere of that. So
yeah, it's not quite the same.
Yeah, but still the Horse Brass, it's still around. And they're still doing well. So I'm impressed with them. Brandon, you had a party last night, and I should introduce you. I meant to do this as soon as we said your name. This is Dr. Brandon Rhodes.
Yeah,
you finished your program, your dissertation.
Mm-hmm.
You were what is it? Scrutiny? What do they call it when they look over your stuff and make sure you're smart?
Oral defense.
Okay, that's right. Yeah. So you did that, mm-hmm. and you were hooded.
I was hooded.
And then,
is that a slang term for something?
Yeah, I know. It could be. Yeah. Okay. Usually you pay extra for it, but I paid about $18,000 for it.
There you go.
Yeah, in 3 years of my life. Yeah.
So congratulations. You are done. And this is beer from your graduation party that mm-hmm. happened last night after all the formalities were done.
This is the Hopworks Secession Cascadia Dark.
Yeah, and it's a good beer.
It's really good.
Yeah. So I don't know how many of these I had last night. I had a lot of them.
Yeah, you did.
This is my first one today. We moved the keg into the garage, ostensibly to keep it cooler, but it turns out our garage is really warm in this summer heat that's not quite summer yet. So it's still
cold.
This
has been your daily check-in of the temperature.
That's right. So, yeah. And what's the name of the degree you got? I forget.
Semiotics and Future Studies.
Nice, nice. So, yeah, you're looking into peak oil and how that affects local religion.
Yeah.
When people can't drive to where they want to go to church or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yep.
And you're publishing your.
I am soliciting a book proposal based on the dissertation.
Okay. Okay.
To a few publishers.
Nice.
So
well, congratulations.
Who I will be talking to my top choice later this week.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's been a long work. And you started that after we started the show? I'm trying to remember how long you've been working at this.
2010.
Okay, yeah, so around the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's been as long as we've been making podcasts. You've been studying and reading
grad
and researching.
Grad school podcast Walking Dead all started that fall.
It's a
good year.
That's how life goes. Yeah. Year. So, well, anyways, congratulations. We had a bonfire last night too, which is the first time we've had one of those in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, and allergies, man, it's the season. Stuff's blowing through the air, and my nose is tired. So I apologize to everyone for my diction or lack thereof, and tone of voice, and whatever happens. But do either of you suffer from allergies?
Oh yes.
Okay, Corey, yes. You've got them like crazy.
Oh yeah.
And Billy. Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Not really. Actually.
Oh, you don't. Okay.
Well, I shouldn't speak too soon. Maybe I will get some later this week. I don't know.
As soon as you admit that, that you don't have them, that's when they hit you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's a certain couple week range. Usually it's later than this, but we don't usually have like hot weather this early either. So
yeah,
but it's like a week or two in June when like it becomes unbearable and I need medication and that sort of thing.
I apologize for any sniffing you might hear on the mic.
That's okay. It'll happen to us all, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's unavoidable.
Yeah. Yesterday I was able to participate in something very exciting. The, I'm trying to remember what it was called. Who Whacked Fair Le Square was Portland Afoot's big launch party of their online edition, which I still haven't downloaded yet. I got to make sure. I think the app is now available. But Portland Afoot went from being a print publication talking about low car life in the Portland area, your 10-minute news magazine, I believe. And it went to an online platform, which is very exciting. So that means it's now free, where before you had to pay for it because they had to print it and mail it to you. Now you can get it on your digital device, and that's all very exciting. But in addition to that excitement, they also had an event that happened yesterday, starting and ending at VeloCult up in the Hollywood District, where I think 200 participants formed teams and went out on TriMet riding buses and MAX trains, collecting evidence and trying to find who it was that actually killed Fair Le Square. And there were actors along the way. It was kind of like a progressive theater experience where we ended up, I believe, down underneath the zoo, the Washington Park Station. They staged one of the segments there. And Steph Routh, one of our former guests and a person in charge of Oregon Walks, the fantastic organization, she was one of the actors at that station. But all over town.
How far flung were these locations?
There were some people that went all the way to Beaverton Transit Center, I think. Oh, I believe geez. Lily from Portland Afoot, her team actually made that far out.
Well.
Yeah, exactly. Some people were going to the airport because during the course of the game, it went from, I think, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and people were taking pictures of all the things they were doing, putting them up on Twitter and hashtagging them with their team name. And as the game went along, I believe the Twitter account would give you other opportunities to collect bonus points. And so they'd say, like, you know, go hug a stranger and you'll get 5 extra points. All of this had to be done with someone from your team in the photo, and everyone was given a blue Portland Afoot balloon. So you could prove that it was you and you were in the game. So,
and I'm sure the TSA just loved that.
I would imagine so. Yeah. I'm not sure if they went all the way down to the airport or not, but yeah. So anyways, it was very exciting, very fun, and everyone was having a great time. And Michael said, I think at the end of it, like, this is an experiment and an initiative to get people to see that transit is not only something you do like for your commute and out of necessity, but also because like you like going places and you like having fun. So yeah, it all went really well. So yeah.
That was like a blast.
Totally. So it was a good time. So Corey, you brought some stuff. You've got like visual aids, which is pretty great.
Oh, I'm just terrible at remembering things. So if I don't bring something to help me along, I'll just babble for the next half hour.
No worries.
Talk, so.
It's the nature of a podcast. We all just, we talk about things. So you guys
already covered allergies and garage temperatures. So
that's right. And now
all the important stuff.
Yeah.
The Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keeler. Corey, you want to tell us about the Skate Coalition and how it got started?
Yeah. So the Skate Coalition started last year, I would say. Billy Miners and JP Rowan were really the catalyst that got it going. It kind of came out of a situation that developed in the Arlington Heights neighborhood. Some neighbors up there were concerned about the number of skaters, illegal traffic violations that were going on with skaters. and they kind of got an ear from council and kind of ran with it. And there was for a while a risk that all skateboarding would be banned.
I remember this when it first started to happen. Yeah,
on Arlington Heights. And well, you know, there's nothing like a major issue to motivate. So Billy and JP and later myself kind of jumped up. And I don't know, Billy, you want to explain a little bit about what happened in the early part of that?
Well, I mean, I guess what kind of first happened was we started meeting up with the transportation, the police bureau, neighborhood association, just kind of having a meeting of the minds, seeing if we could reach some sort of common ground on that. And I think the neighborhood was feeling some frustrations, and so that's why they started pursuing just an outright ban.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that wasn't something that the police bureau or transportation was really, you know, for. And so they kind of wanted to work with the skateboarders, and they wanted all people to come to the table. And so, you know, Randy Leonard kind of proposed the initial ban, and then, you know, luckily we had a chance to kind of talk to him about the work that we had done and, you know, let him know what our plans were, what we thought was an actual kind of feasible solution to it, because when it comes down to just a ban, it's not really going to solve anything.
Right. So what were the frustrations? Like, what were people experiencing that they thought was a problem with skateboards in the neighborhood?
You know, I think the most common thing is just they were scared of, you know, pulling out of their driveway and a skateboarder running to their car. You know, people are using the Arlington Heights Road kind of as a downhill skate park almost. You know, I mean, because you can
Where's that neighborhood again?
It starts up at the zoo and comes down Fairview.
Oh.
So it's the zoo bomb
route. Basically zoo bomb, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, unlike the bike event zoo bomb, skateboarders would go up there all day during the day, whenever it's sunny, whenever the road's dry.
Yeah, Zoo Bomb, for anybody who doesn't know, we've talked about it a lot and it's great, but if you don't know, Zoo Bomb is a fantastic organization of people that ride down the hill on kids' bikes late at night.
A big hill.
A very big hill.
Winding.
The West Hills,
mm-hmm.
As made popular by Everclear. and possibly other things. The skateboard riders are doing this all day, though. This is a thing that like could happen at any point in time.
Yeah, and so that was kind of the biggest issues that, and you know, they would be blowing stop signs, you know, weaving around cars, and a lot of these kids went out there and filmed themselves doing this and put it up on YouTube and, you know, put links everywhere. And so you could do a quick search and find some kid doing something pretty dumb on his skateboard up in Arlington Heights. And so, I mean, and especially the number of downhill skateboarders in Portland has increased drastically over the last few years. So it became pretty apparent that, okay, this is something that we need to address, but a ban is not the right way to do this because, you know, I mean, skateboarding is illegal in how many cities in the U.S.? And that hasn't really stopped anybody from doing it.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah. I'm curious, just as far as, Corey, when we got in touch, you were talking about skateboarding as an option for transportation.
Well, that's kind of the direction I come at it from.
Yeah.
And I actually hardly ever zoo bomb on my skateboard.
Okay.
I like to push uphill, so I'm usually over by Council Crest. I'm going up by OHSU. If I want a good workout, I'm going up the hill, and then I come back down, and I don't need angry neighbors yelling at me from their yard. So I actually kind of avoid that area. However, you know, I definitely see the value of skateboarding as an active mode of transportation. You know, I've been skateboarding since 2001, and I think it's a fantastic bridge of transportation. It's I like to say it's the ultimate last mile solution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can just grab the board, leave your house, skate to the store, leave the, you know, throw it in the cart, do your shopping, go to the bus, hop on the bus, go to school. You know, I mean, you can just, it's so seamless from point to point, especially in an urban area. It's a fantastic way to get around.
You don't have to find a pole to lock it to.
I haven't yet. I don't really have a lock that I think would be very effective in that capacity. However, it would be fun to try.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's a great portable mode of transportation. It's pretty fast. You know, I coming over here, I think, I don't know, what was my average? I think I averaged like 12 and a half coming over here today. And
it's not bad.
You know, and that's, yeah, you can clip along at a great pace and get where you're going. And we can travel on pretty much any facilities that bicycles are using. So it's, and Portland is a fantastic city in that in Portland, almost uniquely in Portland, it is legal to skateboard. We are basically treated like bicycles. And it's something that I felt the need to protect, which is why I kind of jumped into the fray on the Arlington Heights issue. And through the Arlington Heights issue and through finding a good resolution, I feel on that, you know, we realize that when there's questions someone needs to be advocating for this stuff. You know, the skateboard community is very strong. There's many, many thousands of skaters in the Portland area. However, there really hasn't ever been a couple of guys or a group that's really dedicated to advocating for skateboards at the transportation level. Mm-hmm. You know, there's folks putting on great events. There's all kinds of activities, rides, races, fill in the blank. But there hasn't ever been anyone just like going down to City Hall, talking to people, saying, "Hey, this is what we're about." And mm-hmm. so, you know, that's kind of the role we're filling now.
Are there groups like that in other towns?
No, because I mean, for the most part, you know, I think there's maybe one or two other cities in the U.S. that you can legally skate on the street, but, you know, Portland was kind of the first. And so, you know, there'll be groups that'll form in a town like, we want a skate park, and they'll, you know, rally City Hall, and then they'll get the skate park built, and then, okay, our work's done. You know, we got the skate park.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, this is just something that Corey and I have noticed, that people skate to and from all over the city, and it's just getting more and more popular. It's like, wow, you know, this is something we kind of need to, you know, be there. I mean, it kind of sounds funny to say we're skateboard advocates, but, you know, we are.
Again, on my right over here, very unscientific survey, but, you know, coming over here, I always do these mental counts, and I had, I had four bicycles pass by me the other way on a 205 bike path, mm-hmm. Then leading in the spring water. And I had five, maybe six bicycles, but I saw also two skateboards. So, you know, like, if you figure out the averages, we're out there. There's a lot of skaters out there using it as transportation, and I've been impressed how many people I talk to, where after I talk to them about skateboarding, they say, "Wow, I'm noticing so many more skateboards now." And it's just that a lot of people just kind of don't pay attention to them, and the skaters aren't going to raise a big ruckus most of the time. They're just getting from point A to point B. So they're not going to raise a big fuss.
Mm-hmm. And most of the time when I see them, they are on sidewalks.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of
times.
They
may not know their rights of if there's a bike lane.
They might not want to. And in Portland, you can, outside of the downtown core, you can ride on the sidewalk. And,
yeah. Which is exactly like the laws for bicycles in downtown here. So, yeah.
Yeah. When I'm with my 5-year-old daughter, we're on the sidewalk. You know, when I'm going somewhere, I'm on the street. You know, it makes
your 5-year-old can.
She rides on the front of my board.
Sweet.
Yeah. You got a fairly long board. I was looking at that when you came in here. And, yeah.
Well, the one I ride with her is a 5-footer. So okay. You got a lot of real estate up there.
It's
like a tandem, if you will.
Nice.
I also know that I've got a very narrow window. I can pull this off because she's going to get bigger and it's going to get a lot harder. So.
Right. Yeah. Like the more mass, the more balance issues. And
you get some good looks from people with that?
Oh, yeah. A lot of thumbs up. A lot of really excited people. Excited dogs. Everything. And, you know, we do, and my daughter gets excited about the dogs. It's terrible. It's, you know, it's a big mess, but, you know, we do Sunday parkways and, you know, going up Tabor with, last year it was a 4-year-old. Now it'll be a 5-year-old. It's definitely, challenging.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah.
That's so awesome.
I'm curious about perception because I feel like, a lot of this, just talking about like, the struggle for skateboards to be seen as a legitimate mode of transport and to say that they belong on the streets is very similar. It's almost a parallel journey that bicycling has taken because a lot of people have seen bicycling as a hobby. You see like the guy dressed up in spandex, wearing like, you know, Ray-Ban glasses or whatever. And he's out on like his weekend, ride, his training ride or whatever, which that kind of influences maybe the way that people see the other people on bikes that are using that, not as necessarily recreation, but as transportation. And so it seems like the perception is probably it's following a similar track for skateboarding. Is that accurate or?
I can see a lot of similarities.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's slowly changing the more that, you know, somebody knows somebody that's getting into skating. You know, I mean, there's, you know, I see older guys that, you know, like, "Oh, I used to skate back in the 80s, but they wouldn't do it for a while. And then, you know, they see these people kind of cruise around on, you know, longer board with softer wheels. And like, you know, I bet you I can do that. And they'll bust out their old skateboard. And, you know, even if it's just that's cruising awesome. To the corner store, like going to get tacos down the street, it's, you know, I mean, it's fun, you know. And I think people that used to do it or even people are just picking it up now are realizing, you know, how enjoyable it is and, mm-hmm. you know, how effective a mode of transportation it is.
Yeah.
And there's a class of trips that they may otherwise have had to either gear up and get on their bike or get in the car.
Yeah.
And now suddenly I can just throw a board in front of me.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that's and street cred at the same time.
Yeah.
Word. Yeah. You know, and I mean, I never got more attention in my life than when I commuted downtown on my longboard because I was riding a 5-foot water ski longboard back then, and you know, nice. What I mean, tourists wanting to take pictures, it was just ridiculous. And so, yeah, you definitely get a lot of street cred, as Billy put it. But another thing we're seeing with longboarding is, you know, a lot of people pick it up in college. Mm-hmm. It's a great campus mode of transportation. But unlike shortboard skateboarding, where, you know, once you get past, say, about 16, the usage drops way off. Longboarding, a lot of people stick with it. And we're seeing a lot of people getting up into their 30s, even 40s. They're still longboarding. And there's no real reason to stop. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as hard on your body if you're not likely to crash as often. So it really is something you can do your whole life.
Yeah. Do you think there's a similar divide that bicycling has among the skateboarding community? Like, because the first thing I think of with skateboards is like a Thrasher catalog and some guy in the air, you know, popping a sweet ollie. I've now exhausted all of my skateboarding terminology, so you guys will have to fill in the rest. But I'm thinking of just of like kind of the sports and trick end of that sort of thing. Like, is there any tension between skateboarders as far as like the uses are concerned?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely tensions. You know, I mean, kind of the core skateboard community that's popping sweet ollies at the skate park, you know, doing that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, that's definitely more kind of a trick based skating.
Okay.
You know, and people that ride longboards, you can't really do tricks as easily or at all on those.
Right.
So it's more about the ride. But, you know, I think more people that, you know, go to skate parks or do street skating are kind of starting to realize the value in having a longer board just for commuting or, you know, going downhills, you know, as part of it. Like, the technology for downhill skateboarding has increased a lot over the last few years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's one thing, is that racing and downhill skateboarding has gotten very popular because people realize they can ride these skateboards at speeds, you know, pretty dang fast, and mm-hmm. they're in control the whole time. So, you know, that's gotten very popular. But for a long time, core skateboarders kind of saw longboarding as, you know, like, oh, I'm a freshman at college, I'm going to go get my longboard and cruise around campus in my flip-flops. And,
right.
You know, so slowly but surely, longboarding is kind of pushing past that sort of, you know, I don't know how to skate kind of mentality. And, you know, people are gaining some skill on boards and, you know, branching out to other varieties.
Yeah.
So it really is its own thing.
Okay.
And the culture around longboarding is more about safety, and it doesn't have as much of the counterculture component. From my friend Sean does like longboarding training and team stuff with kids. And that's what he said that drew him into it, and his three boys all do it. Is that? I mean, he started this off in Canada, so maybe that's bullshit. Like, in Canada, longboarding is like all square. Is that
Sean Benesh?
Sean Benesh.
Yep. Yeah. I've skated with his kids a few times.
Yeah.
I mean, I would definitely say, you know, longboarding, at least my background, is downhill skateboarding and racing. And so when you're competing in a downhill race, protective gear is pretty essential.
Right.
You know, we all wear full face helmets, racing leathers and stuff, because when you're on hills, we're doing 60 to 70 miles an hour, you know.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
Only Billy,
that's
not
incredible.
Me.
Incredible.
I mean, the speeds that people can reach on skateboards is pretty ridiculous.
It's intense.
But I mean, you know, you can take a fall doing those speeds and, you know, this protected gear and walk up and, okay, where'd my skateboard go? And, you know, find that. And so I think just the people that have the sort of downhill background are more aware of the dangers of it. And so right. That's why protective gear just, you know, okay, I've got my board. Well, where's my helmet?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and compared to the guys that, you know, like just kind of cruise around downtown, like, oh, I'm going to ollie down these stairs, or, you know, I'm just going to go to the skate park and kind of dink around. The protective gear isn't really as much of a seen as a necessity, I would say. I mean, there's the older guys that, you know, aren't too concerned about looking as cool. But, you know, I definitely think there's a certain amount of kind of just playing the part and, you know, looking cool, like, oh, I don't need helmets, I don't need knee pads, you know, and hopefully they'll kind of push past that, because I mean,
they only got one head.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you'll never see a professional downhill rider like in a poster or in a magazine that isn't wearing a ridiculous amount of safety gear. So I think that those images of these guys flying around the corner wearing full leathers and these
looking like Iron Man,
yeah, looking like Iron Man basically, and in Billy's case with a skeleton on their outfit, you know,
really,
yeah, that's it's awesome. Pretty amazing. so you know, I think that definitely helps. Also, you know, I was involved with the skate community down in Salem as well. And there, you know, there were some horrible injuries. And it's amazing if you can connect with a few key riders and just kind of start a razzing campaign just convince them, hey guys, will you just not ride without a helmet, or with a, unless you're wearing a helmet, just don't ride, and don't ride with people who aren't wearing helmets. And you know, it really worked. You know, down in Salem, we're seeing a lot of young guys with longboards, and almost all of them are wearing helmets. And further, if you show up at a session without a helmet, they will yell you off the track.
That's really fascinating.
Good. Yeah, it's pretty. It blew my mind. I was really shocked that it actually took off that way. But yeah, you know, it's just you see one guy with brain swelling. Mm-hmm. Who can't say his name anymore, and that pretty much does it.
That'll teach.
Yeah, and I mean, peer pressure is very powerful. So seeing it being used for, you know, to the
brain
effect of safety
is more prep.
Yeah, yeah. It's good to know that works.
Yeah, that said, I don't think it works that well with older riders who are getting into it. I've talked to quite a few older guys in Southeast and be like, hey, great board, why don't you put on a helmet? They're like, oh, I'm going to wear a helmet.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there's definitely, you know, there's certain times when safety gear is much more of a necessity. I mean, I think a helmet's always a great idea, but, you know, to be honest, if I'm cruising, you know, a quarter mile to the burrito store around the corner,
yeah,
usually I don't wear a helmet because I'm just, you know, doing 5-10 miles an hour, but it's like, okay, I'm going all the way to downtown. Well, there's this little hill and there's all this traffic. Okay, I'll throw my helmet on. Like, I mean, helmets are always a great idea, but, you know, people aren't going to wear them all the time. You know, we should just try and kind of like make sure that, you know, yeah, you know, always push it.
Right, right. Be firm about it, but don't be a dick.
Yeah,
more or less.
And that's a really tough thing too, is that, you know, you see these kids and, you know, they'll see somebody scanning with a helmet, like, hey asshole, put a helmet on, boy. It's like, you know, I don't think that's really going to convince them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's tough to try and convince some of these kids. You know, it's like, hey man, like, you should really get a helmet. Like, well, I don't want to pay for that. And
yeah.
Like, well, I bet your folks will.
Seriously. So what was the resolution with the Arlington Heights story? Because I think you guys referenced that, like, things got better, but how did that end?
Well, so they ended up sort of kind of reworking the city ordinance about skateboarding in Portland. And so, you know, they just kind of readdressed it and configured it. And another big issue that a lot of neighbors had was the sound of skateboarders, you know, just coming down the hill late at night. You know, because they got, I mean, there's families. It's a residential neighborhood. And so based on the levels of sound created by skateboards, it does exceed the limits allowed in a residential neighborhood past 10 p.m.
Interesting. Okay.
So in the Arlington Heights neighborhood, you can't skateboard past 10 p.m. to 7 a.m.
Okay.
Which is, you know, solely based on sound levels. And so.
Are there pneumatic wheels?
No.
Well, there are, Billy, but nobody rides them.
Yeah,
they do exist.
It compromises.
They're not practical. They're just not practical. However, wheel technology in the last 10 years, I mean, it has come a remarkable distance. In fact,
reinventing the wheel.
Very much so.
Yeah. When I started riding, and I'm sure when Billy started riding too, you know, there were really only a few options for longboard wheels. You know, and they seemed to be much more concerned about what color they were than their handling characteristics.
Right.
And I mean, now, I mean, you can just pick which characteristic you want in a wheel, and there is a manufacturer, you know, beating down the doors to meet that demand. It's just remarkable how the market's changing. And because I think also because there's a lot of older people getting into it, you know, you've got wheels now that retail for $70 a set and boards. What there are boards, there are boards that, yeah, Billy gets all of his wheels for free. I don't,
okay.
but you know, there's boards that, I mean, $400-$500 for really high end boards, and you know, trucks, we don't want to even go to that. So, yeah. I mean, it's just, it is maturing. It's maturing kind of like bicycles did. Yeah. I think it's maturing from just like something kids do into a real sport.
Yeah. And there are people that are also interested more in the color of their wheels on their bicycles than the actual performance of them. But yeah. I'm curious, just for both of you, maybe starting with you, Corey, how did you get into skating and what kept you with it?
I started, it was the summer of, I believe, 2001. And I was coming out of surfing. I was surfing constantly all the times before I was married. And
That stopped it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So there's a period in the summer almost every year where the surf is just garbage. Mm-hmm. And I was just getting really antsy because of no waves, just week after week after week. And there's this guy going down the hit street in Northwest Portland, and he was on a water ski board. And I thought, hey, I've got a water ski. And I went and asked him if I could try it out, and he did. And it was amazing. And I was like, hey, this is great. And ran out and got my water ski and drilled some holes in it and mounted the trucks, and that board got me through the first couple of years.
Wow. So this is a legitimate, it's an actual water ski.
It was a wheels. Real. It was an Indy 500 water ski that I actually skied on.
Slalom?
No, it's actually from a set of
from
two.
A pair. Okay. Like, yeah.
Boring wood ski, which is actually what you want.
Yeah.
No fiberglass for longboard skis. It's okay. Not good. And it made a phenomenal longboard. And then after that,
it's
built some other longboards, and I made an aluminum longboard, which will never die. And you know, it's just an addictive mode of transportation. And, you know, it's a really satisfying way to get around.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah. How about you?
I mean, I guess I've kind of been skating on and off my whole life. I grew up in Texas, so I was, you know, skating behind strip malls, all in down sets of stairs. And I moved to Portland about 8-9 years ago and started going to the Burnside Skate Park a bunch. And then, you know, started meeting these guys that would go out and bomb hills all the time and got into that. And then kind of found out about downhill racing and started getting involved in kind of like the race circuit that happens. And, you know, I've been kind of racing, I guess, for the last 6-7 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And you've been zoo bombing on your board. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. You know, just off the top of my head, I'm remembering the two times I've been zoo bombing. I need to get out someday when I don't have a job where I get up at 5:30 in the morning. I'm going to go and do this again. But I remember one of the times I was zoo bombing, there was a guy in a luge suit. And he was, I believe, on his back with wheels basically on his back. And he was bombing down in that fashion. Do you know anything about that at all?
That could have been my roommate, actually.
Okay.
There's a good chance. I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, street luge is just kind of like taking sort of these longboards and just laying down on it. And since there's a lot less wind resistance, you go a lot faster.
Yeah. It seems freaky, but awesome.
Like, yeah. I mean, it's usually pretty stable, you
Wasn't
know, for the
there
most
a
part.
Jackass episode like 10 years ago where they did that in the West Hills of Portland?
I don't know.
I mean, granted, without gear. Yeah, now it's Jackass.
Yeah. Now I'm kind of curious about that.
It was like I watched two episodes of that, and that was one of them.
Yeah. Huh. I'll say I watched a lot of Jackass because I was so intrigued by it. That is what television was made for, in my opinion, but that's a whole other thing.
Well, street luge is still on the international circuit, isn't it? I mean, they still do a lot of it in Europe and to a lesser extent here.
You know, a lot of the downhill skateboard races I do, they also have kind of a street luge class where those guys can come out and race street luges, but you know, it seemed like, you know, maybe 10 years ago, street luging was the biggest thing at these downhill races. And they only had, you know, a few guys that rode skateboards just because it's harder.
Right.
You know, and so in the last few years, there's been more kids that have gotten their balance on a skateboard. So all the kids are racing skateboards and just a few old guys ride street luge.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
So the tables are turning.
That's interesting.
So to go back to the advocacy stuff, what's the cutting edge on this stuff?
So on the advocacy, we're really just trying to get the word out, meet and greet a lot of people. Mostly, I mean, I think a lot of what we're trying to do is just make people aware that we're out there. I have some data in front of me that is actually a survey that was done by Tessa Walker at PSU, and her data is just coming out now. So this, she gave us kind of like a little sneak peek, and it's just fascinating to see the stuff that's coming out of this and why people longboard and how many. One of the things that I found so amazing about this is that she had 460 respondents. And even though there wasn't a question on her survey regarding mental health, over 400 gave mental health, like it helped their mental health as a primary reason of skateboarding.
Fascinating.
And I think it's just a really amazing really? Thing. Yeah. It's a little tidbit out of there, but yeah, you know, we're just trying to be a presence. I do not think with the number of longboarders that are continuing to show up on the streets, I am sure there will continue to be some friction in some communities. And I would rather be ahead of the curve than behind it. I want to maintain what Portland has and also enhance. You know, we're talking to TriMet, we're trying to talk to Safe Routes to Schools, we're trying to get the word out that you know, this can be done safely, this can be done effectively, and just, you know, being there as a model for how to do it right.
What are the dynamics between users of skateboards and TriMet or any transit agency? Like, what is transit amenable to skateboarding? Is it does it care?
I would say on the grand scheme it is, but you know, the kind of the thing that I'm trying to address is just, you know, in TriMet's promotional materials, you know, how you use TriMet, there's pictures of people walking, there's pictures of people on their bikes everywhere. There's never been pictures of people on a skateboard. There's never been, you know, hey, I want to take my skateboard on TriMet, this is how you do it. you know, the do's and the don'ts, you know, and I think this, there's room to grow. And I mean, I see it all right now as low hanging fruit. There's just so, there's so little awareness that almost everywhere you turn, at least for me, I just see avenues where we could be enhancing public perception, improving the sport, growing the sport, and increasing it as a mode of transportation outside of just recreation.
Yeah. Is there any friction between transit and skateboarding?
I don't think so.
Okay,
I mean,
that's good.
I everyone I've talked to, you know, they just kind of look at me and say, oh yeah, you know, I can't believe no one's ever talked about that. You know, it's just kind of like, yeah, yeah, of course there's a bunch of skaters on our facilities, you know, using our buses and Macs, and it just never occurred to them that they should address them directly.
Yeah. What about just friction in general? Like, what else do you need to advocate for so people don't have the wrong perception?
Well, I think a really big thing is just that there's a lot of perception and fear. And, you know, I remember this because I remember before I skateboarded going Beaverton Hillsdale Highway in my car and seeing a guy longboarding down in the bike lane, totally safe, you know, totally under control.
Sure.
And thinking, you know, hey, can he stop that thing? You know, is he able to stop that? You know, and so I think that there's just an awful lot of education that needs to be with the general public. A lot of what comes out of Arlington Heights, I think, is a perception that the longboarders are totally out of control, unable to stop at will, unable to steer, which is what
even though they've
it,
never seen like a pile of crashed ones at the end of a hill.
Well, you know, that that's,
clearly they know how to turn that damn corner.
That's just it, and you know, it's been quite a while, and I mean, I don't know of major injuries on Arlington Heights. I know there's some anecdotal stuff, but you know, to my knowledge, no one's ever died. And you know, it's the kind of thing where I think there's a lot more fear than there is actual risk.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's something I was kind of thinking about on the way here actually is, you know, a lot of these, you know, kind of these parents and, you know, people that live in the neighborhoods, they, you know, when they teach their kid to ride a bike, teach them how to steer it, you teach them how to stop it. But their kids that want to learn how to skateboard, well, I don't know how to skateboard. I don't know how to teach them how to control this or stop it. And so it's something they don't really understand. And so when they think of people going down a hill, it scares them. Like, oh, they can't control that. But
Portland's kind of lumpy. We have hills. So you have to wonder that.
Yeah. And so, yeah. But I mean, it's one of those things that just because, you know, they weren't there to teach their kids how to do it safely and in control, then whenever they see somebody else doing that, they just kind of automatically assume they're out of control. They can't do this safely. But I mean, if I fell and crashed every time I went down a hill, I would have quit skating so long ago. But
it
I mean,
wouldn't like, have been worth it at that point anymore.
Yeah, no. I mean, it. You know, that's the thing. It's like I do it as much as I do because I know how to do it in control and safely, and it's enjoyable.
Yeah. So I don't I don't have any context for skating. I'm not really into it. I had friends that did, but I don't know how it works. So explain stopping to me. How yeah,
after
you...
the show, I actually want to see you guys go down the hill that we live on. I'm really curious.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I guess there's, you know, two main ways I could think of stopping. One of them's called foot braking.
Okay.
Where you usually take off your back foot and you just drag it on the ground.
Right. Okay.
You know, pretty self-explanatory. And a new way that's kind of become more and more popular over the last few years is sliding, where they have kind of like a leather glove that has a piece of plastic on the palm that's basically like cutting board material.
Yeah.
A really kind of dense plastic. And so they'll put their hand on the ground and kind of push the board sideways, kind of similar to snowboarding. So you kind of use the friction that's coming sideways against the wheels. And you can do that, you know, both ways, depending which way you want to turn.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, that's one of the safest and easiest ways for them to stop.
That's good way to stop very quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, you can stop sliding very, very quickly. And also you can transition, you know, to stand-up sliding.
Mm-hmm.
And once you know how to stand-up sliding, you don't really even need to put your hand down on the ground. You can just, like snowboarding, turn the board sideways, come to a stop.
Once you get the basic mechanics of the move.
Yeah.
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 And, it's, you know, that gets to be – you're probably going to have a couple years under your belt before you're doing that kind of stuff.
Right.
But, you know, foot braking is really straightforward. You can pick it up in a weekend very easily. And, you know, once you know what you're doing on foot brake, you can foot brake from at least, 30 miles per hour at least.
Yeah.
Safely in a controlled manner. You know, when I'm up on Barber Boulevard coming down towards Terwilliger, it's a pretty big hill.
Yeah.
I'll have fast traffic on the left of me right there. I might not want to do a slide, you know, not because I think I'm going to drift into traffic, but it might cause an accident because the cars are going to freak out when my board turns sideways.
They might drift.
They think you're crashing.
Yeah, they think I'm crashing. So, you know, that's a classic example where even though it's going to wear out my shoe, I'm going to put that foot down on the ground and I come to a stop. And I find that foot braking is, for me, pretty comparable to, you know, stopping on my little Trek 1100 old road bike with skinny little tires with over 100 PSI pressure. Because, you know, you've got similar problems that you're going to come up against if you just try to slam on the brakes. You're just going to slide.
Right.
And so I find the ability to stop is, I tell people that it's kind of comparable to a road bike with little tiny skinny tires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, go ahead.
I've got a question. So,
please do.
You almost answered it earlier. If you had a magic wand that could change one thing in the laws of Portland and then one thing about public perception about skating, what would it be?
Well, Billy, you want to go first on this?
The laws, I don't know. I guess public perception, just that skateboarders are up to no good. You know what I mean? The number of times like
they're all just a little shit.
Well, yeah. You know, the number of times people just kind of, they look at me different because I'm on a skateboard. They just assume like, oh, this guy's, you know, it's. He's a criminal or a thug. And,
when in fact, skateboarding is not a crime.
Very much so.
Not in ska.
And I mean, as far as laws go, like, I don't really know if there's much I'd change in this city. You know, Portland has already.
Because you're riding underneath so many of like the bike laws, essentially.
Yeah. Unless they want to like let us blow stop signs, not get tickets. I don't know. I mean, Portland has done, they've done so much to make it, you know, acceptable in this city that, you know, all I think that really needs to change now is kind of public perception of, you know, what skateboarders are all about. You know, it's like, oh, he rides a skateboard because he hates his parents. Like,
right.
No, it's just like, fun. It's enjoyable. It's good exercise.
It's a lot of backstory to read into that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I love this all must yield to skateboarders concept, Billy. We got to look into this. Yeah. All must yield to skateboarders. I think the one thing I could think of in Portland's laws is that technically skateboards are still under kind of the area of pedestrians. And a lot of that's because of the state law. I would love to see at some point the state of Oregon adopt a state law that puts in the vehicle code that skateboards are a legal class of vehicle, much like bicycles have been given kind of a special carve out in the state motor vehicle code. Because then it would allow not just Portland, but it would allow other cities to decide, you know, if they don't like skateboarders, fine. But it would let them decide, are we going to make you allow you in the city? Are we not? Are you going to have to ride on the street? Are you going to have to ride on the sidewalk? It gives you that option where right now, if cities, you know, Salem's going through this right now, if cities want to make it legal to skateboard, it's kind of tricky because the state law is extremely vague as to what you are. You know, you're somewhere between a pedestrian and like a horse and a buggy.
Yeah.
You know, so I also, you know, I daydream about, you know, a Tour de Oregon on a skateboard. You know, I love the idea that, you know, you could make skateboard tourism part of the state culture. You could make it, you know, not just in a city, but you could really go from town to city, country, you know, and in between.
Yeah.
And I don't think that'll really be possible on a large scale until these larger issues are addressed. But in the short run, I am very appreciative of what Portland has. I don't want to take away anything from what Portland has. And I think our biggest goal is just, you know, getting the outreach out there and you know, just helping people get on a board. You know, it's amazing how many people might like to try it and just have no idea how they'd go about it. You know, I'm 45. I knew, how do I start longboarding at 45, you know? Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and Portland is the best damn city on earth, in my opinion. So it's a good place to, a lot of things are already in place to make it good.
Yeah.
As far as tourism is concerned, like, do people do longboard touring? Is anybody, like, can you carry stuff with you and go camp in the woods or something?
Yeah. I mean, I know I've heard of, you know, people every once in a while, it seems like somebody does a push across America.
Yeah.
I know a group of guys did I won't say they did Skate Oregon, where they skated north to south in Oregon to raise, you know, awareness for cancer. And, you know, there's kind of various things, but, you know, I think about the routes they're taking, like, yeah, we're just going on the side of I-5. Like, ooh, like, yeah, that way to go. You know, that sounds like a lot of fun. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that do use it for, you know, really kind of long distance transportation, but you know, at the moment there really isn't like the best kind of route for you. You know, they kind of have to piggyback on bike trails or go on the side of the highway.
Right.
Yeah, that said, there have been some pretty epic journeys. Just last week, I skated from downtown Portland out to Newburgh with a couple of guys. It's killing me that their names aren't coming to my head. But, you know, wonderful guys. And it's the Longboard Tramps. That's their kind of their thing. They're Longboard Tramps. I think you can go to longboardtramp.com and watch their journey. And, they're already down in California going up the Klamath River. And that's in a week. You know, it's pretty remarkable that you could do that. They're carrying all their own gear. They're carrying 45 pounds of gear in their packs.
That's incredible. And
that hurts my knees just thinking about it.
Yeah, no kidding.
They built
those brake moves you're talking about with that weight.
Well, they built these parachute things, and it's pretty remarkable. And when they get to the top of a big grade, they just flip these things out, and I'm dead serious, and it keeps their speed down.
Longboardtramp.com?
I think it's longboardtramp.com.
Or at least we'll Google that phrase and see.
And they have a Facebook page, and they're posting up pictures all the time. It's pretty remarkable. But, you know, these guys are going down to California, and then they're heading east and going all the way to New York. They're going to be there by August.
Wow. With parachutes. So with fucking parachutes. Awesome.
They'll float a little bit of the way.
Seriously.
Rob Thompson, a few years back, went most of the way around the world on a longboard. This really can be done. And, you know, it's just going to take some time, I think.
Is longboardtramp.com, you said?
I believe so.
All right.
That's it.
All right. Now I have it bookmarked to look at it later.
Yeah, Chuck Swafford and Ruben Duran. That's it. Yeah, the great guys. I really enjoyed spending the morning with them and had a great time going out to Newburgh. And it was a really good time. I just wish I could have gone further with them.
Yeah, for sure. Well, maybe just in a way of closing, favorite rides around town? Because I know Portland is the only town that I can think of that has a designated skate route, kind of like there are bike routes in places. It's just one route, right? And I don't know where it goes.
Actually, the skate routes, it's kind of in the downtown area. They have a few kind of sections marked as a skate route.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, bless their hearts. They try to pick out a good skate route, but you know, they weren't really too sure what was going to make the best skate route. You know, they're trying to think of, okay, where's most of the car traffic go? How are we going to keep the skateboards kind of separate from that?
Right.
So there isn't, it's more of like a suggested skate route. Like we'd prefer if you went this way, you know, there's maybe a little less traffic and it's probably better for you. But, you know, I mean, they came up with those skate routes years ago, and looking at them now, it's like, okay, those should probably be revamped.
Right.
Well, the signs are great. I just love the signs.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
I
mean, it's so great going downtown and seeing skate route.
Yeah, it's a great little logo. It's the classic, you know.
It legitimizes it.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
Actually, I brought you guys little one-inch buttons featuring the skateboarder from the skate route logo.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So
thank this you is, too. Yeah, this will give me street credibility.
1 inch of street cred.
So favorite places to ride. Where do you guys like to go?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, honestly, like Mount Tabor's, that's a lot of fun. I mean, I've skated that a million times. I was just up there earlier and I always seem to have a good time just kind of cruising down that, even, you know, trying to go as fast as I can or just kind of enjoying the scenery, looking around. Like, it's smooth ride. It's sunny. Big trees everywhere.
It's a volcano.
And what?
That's a dormant volcano, but it's cinder cone,
right? It's extinct.
Right? Yeah.
My 5-year-old knows that, Tilly. You didn't know that?
I'm from Texas.
There's no lava there either, so it's like, all congealed.
It's one of two volcanoes within city limits anywhere in North America. The other one is in Bend, I think.
Well, you learn something every day. Yeah.
So Billy likes Mount Tabor. Corey?
I also like Mount Tabor. I live right at the base of Mount Tabor, and it was a big deciding point when we bought our house, like where we wanted to live.
Yeah.
However, my favorite rides tend to be a little longer. I think my favorite ride I like to take these days is going downtown, usually over Hawthorne Bridge. And then just kind of working my way up, up to Williger.
Saying uphill.
Yeah, I like to push uphill. It's a great workout. Sometimes lately, I'll be going all the way out to Barber. More often, I'll turn off at like the OHSU, go up OHSU. Maybe I'll go all the way up to Council Crest or
Sam Jackson Parkway.
No, I don't take Sam Jackson. No, that would be kind of deadly.
It would be awesome, but it would be dangerous.
It's not my cup of tea. But in any case, you just kind of push up through the neighborhoods there. There's just it's a fantastic ride. Twilliger itself is a fantastic ride. It feels like you're riding through the woods. and you're right in the middle of town, spectacular views here and there. Yeah. And, so that, you know, that, you know, from my house, that makes a great, you know, 12, 13 mile ride. And, it just makes for a great ride. I also like the 205 to Springwater Corridor and back around.
Nice.
It's kind of a big loop. And that's, if I have a little more time, that's a great ride too.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Seattle? They have a pretty great network of trails up there.
You know, I haven't ridden much in Seattle, and that's too bad because, yeah, I've heard that, and I actually know some long-distance pushers up in Seattle that come down for our events, and I never seem to make it up there to there, so yeah. I feel kind of bad about that.
No worries. Well, it'll be there for a while. Seattle and Minneapolis both have apparently great off-road trail networks. And that's the one thing I think that Portland has a few of but could use a lot more of is places that are totally separate from auto traffic, so you don't have to worry about dealing with combustion engines, basically, unless it's the Springwater Corridor, and then there are lots of combustion engines going up and down that around our area.
The cops and the homeless both.
Two cycle?
Two-stroke engines.
Some guy driving a weed eater with wheels down. So, well, let's we do some headlines? We have the one, so I will play our headlines music here.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights. Pedal just as fast as we can into the morning light. Pedal just as fast as we can into the daylight. Pedal.
All right, our one and only headline is from Bike Portland. Where else? Portland Farmers Market introduces the Produce Peddler.
Yeah, this is a good-looking one here. And the picture doesn't get any bigger than that, so I will make it bigger.
Shall I read an excerpt?
Please do.
Portland's love of cargo bikes just took another big step, and I mean big. The folks who run Portland Farmers Market debuted their new Produce Peddler cargo bike at the Buckman Market yesterday. The bike is an old-fashioned style, extra-large, classic Dutch bakfiets. I have no idea what that word is. It has a load capacity of 660 pounds, and it's nearly 12 feet long. The bike will travel to the 8 different Portland farmers markets around town throughout the season. It's set up as a mini market and will offer vegetables and produce, flowers, and assorted goodies from market vendors. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is, I believe, if I'm not mistaken,
it's
I think
doubling
this is
down on Portland culture.
Yeah. There was the coffee shop down at the PSU farmers market that was, it may have been on this actual same bicycle, and I don't remember if that's the case or not. But I don't even remember the name. I think it was Cafe Velo, which means what? Coffee, bike, or something like that. But they had like an espresso machine on this enormous thing. There's a couple of these at Clever Cycles down on Hawthorne. And they actually have like leaf spring suspension for the, you know, which is why they can carry so much weight.
Leaf spring suspension.
Yeah, yeah. So big steel thingies that go underneath and kind of flex and bend to give it a smooth ride. It's the same basic concept you would have on any like car or truck or anything else with a load bearing. I know I have to check those as part of my pre-trip inspection for my job every day.
Yes,
so.
Indeed.
yeah, but the cool thing is that it's basically like it a lot like a wheelbarrow in some ways. Like you can just, you know, push the thing ahead of you as you're sitting on a classic Brooks saddle. And I'm really excited about this. So the one thing that Jonathan was pointing out in this article is that it, I think there's a picture down here. It's not just for looks. It actually transports stuff, and they are riding it around town. So pretty great. I think it might only be a single speed. I'm not sure about that, which would make it more difficult to move. But I love these machines. If money was no object, I would have one of my own. So
that would be amazing.
Here's to hoping.
It's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a great solution, especially, and bakfiets is the word. It's the Dutch word for, I think, cargo bike. And in Holland, it's all flat. So
it's all good?
Yeah, exactly. There's not as much problem with a single speed. Here in town, as we said, it's lumpy. So, so that's our headline, and now we're done with the news. Oops. That's the end
too
of the
soon.
Show. Seriously, hang on. Shit. There we go.
You're taking a lot of responsibility in owning and riding a bicycle. You are now an operator of a wheeled vehicle.
And that goes to show you how superfluous the audio bumpers really are. Mm-hmm. So we've got one piece of mail as well.
One of them.
And then we're set to go.
Sure. I don't know why I do this every time, like I'm shaking out the paper. Marcus donates, thank you, Marcus, and writes, Damn fine podcast. I'm coming to Stumptown in July and would love to meet up for a beer or more. Also, suggestions for good dinner places for me and my better half. We're renting two Bromptons from Clever Cycles for the week. And lastly, I own a Raleigh 20. It's way cool in coffee color, too. Keep up the great work. It's a lot of fun to listen to for a bike geek like me.
Suggestions for a good dinner place. One thing that comes immediately to mind is the Good Food Here cart pod up on Southeast Belmont, which is not too far from the Horse Brass Pub. There's a cart in there called the Cackalack, I believe, which makes the best chicken sandwich I've ever had. It's like a big piece of breaded fried chicken between, you know, bread with some other stuff on it. And you can choose like the level of spiciness that you want it to be, as well as many other factors. So that's pretty good. You guys have any places you like to eat?
Ooh, that's tough. There's one, like, as far as food carts go, there's a breakfast food cart on Mississippi and Skidmore called the Big Egg.
Oh, yeah. I've heard good things about this.
Yeah, I'm there every week.
Okay.
I love the Big Egg.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, there's so many great options, but I think, you know, the trendy, we've already started the comments. I mean, you're coming to Portland, you're renting a bike, just go from pod to pod, you know, make it a culinary exploration.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many great food carts in town.
Totally.
You could just I could spend all day just going from pod to pod, trying out food.
Gorging yourself.
Exactly. Yeah,
passing out at some point.
Brandon. I'll break from the food cart thing and say the Country Cat.
Oh, right.
If you eat meat.
Yeah, they make good meat.
Yep. The best chicken I've ever had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
is
yeah.
Is there fried chicken there?
Definitely. That is probably a step up from the food cart. But yeah, there's almost no reason to go inside for food in this town, I was going to say, unless it's raining and unless you want to go to the Country
for
Cat.
For 3 months of the year, there's no reason to go inside. But the other 9 years, get the fuck inside.
Seriously. So yeah. And then, of course, a beer or more. I don't know what more means, but I would love to meet up for a beer. So,
one more.
Exactly. All right. Well, hey, this brings us down to the end of the show. We got a couple shows coming up next week. Lindsay Kendra is a cancer survivor, and she does racing. And we don't talk about racing on this podcast too much. So I'm curious. She's going to enlighten us, I think, and I'll learn something. And I'll probably get rid of some of my prejudices and perceptions, and I'll be a nicer person after that.
Yeah, it's like a cross, like, bike subculture reconciliation.
Reaching across the aisle.
Mm.
Yeah. Wow. Will Van Loo, the week after that on May 19th. He's everywhere. He's part of the Transportland Cargo Bike Collective. And we talked to almost all of them, but Will is one of the members we haven't talked to yet. He also works for the BTA. And, you know, I think they had the Alice Awards, and I haven't even checked out who won those yet. So someone was recognized this last weekend for being an amazing person in the bicycling world. But yeah, I don't know who that is yet. Lance Poehler, he's got a top secret project that we can't talk about yet, but he's going to tell us about that on the Memorial Day weekend. And then Joe Doble, we rescheduled him. He was supposed to be in last week, but schedules are tough things to remember. And Joe, we love the guy so much, we decided to give him another chance. He's going to come in and talk about, he's got the first bicycle fashion shop here in town, devoted exclusively to fashion, but you can't buy bikes there. So yeah, he's got, his old shop is the fashion shop. The new shop is a new and expanded cargo bike store. So yeah. Well, what else have we got? Is there anything else we should talk about before we're done?
Where can we find out more about what you all are up to?
Oh, totally. Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot to ask about
this.
That's right.
How did we not ask that earlier?
Seriously. I'm sorry. We have done you a great disservice.
Okay.
This is where you drop the mic and walk out of the studio.
Yeah. I run a website called pdxdownhill.com.
Okay.
And we organize a lot of local events around town. And we're actually putting on the third annual Mount Tabor Downhill Skateboard Race on July 14th.
Fantastic. Spectator sport.
Yeah, so
where's that at?
Mount Tabor.
Oh, but sorry. Yeah. I just heard downhill. The beer was clouding the rest of it. It's a lot of sunshine today, man. Yeah. The old dude's brain is cooked.
So yeah, I mean, we want to invite anybody to come and just check out downhill skateboard racing. We're also having a mini bike class, so the Zoo Bomb crew can show up. And
right.
Skateboards will be racing for $1,000 for first place, and mini bikes is $500 first place.
Oh, that's not bad.
Billy, are you going to make him stand funny this year?
Yeah, probably. I've got some kind of funny rules for the skateboard race.
Rules for these races.
It makes it fun though, and it's just a bunch of guys kind of dressed up, you know, and nice. Spandex trying to get aero on Mount
there
Tabor.
Nice. Is that like an ollie?
Very much so, like an ollie. They'll ollie their way down Mount Tabor.
Very good. That's like the bunny hop, I suppose.
Yeah.
That's not a word.
So also a skate-friendly PDX.
Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of the campaign that we sort of started as a part of the Northwest Skateboard Coalition. It'd be a skatefriendlypdx.com, and just kind of to help create awareness and, you know, let people know what we're trying to do in the city. And hopefully we'll have a website for the Northwest Skateboard Coalition soon.
Cool.
In the works.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, keep up the good work. Thank you. Anyone who does advocacy for anything is great. And so much more when it involves simplicity and being able to pare down and do what you need to with less. So we appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much for having
us. Yeah, no, thanks for having us.
Yeah, so Corey Poole, Billy Miner, thank you so much for joining us. Brandon Rhodes, thank you for coming back as our co-host emeritus.
Amen. The Doctor of Buds.
Seriously. I think I said I was going to call you just Dr. Brandon from here on out.
I only use it ironically
or doctor,
though.
So doctor, did you take the trash out yet?
Just call me Brandon.
Please. Yeah, okay. All right, sounds good. Well, let's wrap this up. There it is. Oh, I'm sorry. You need the thing on me. Or no, I have it. Or you have it. Okay, I'll do it. our roles have been all undefined. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us feedback about the program, suggestions for anything we should talk about, drink, or someone we should talk to. The email address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can call us and leave us a voicemail or SMS. There is absolutely no voice confrontation that will happen in this call. You can do it any old time. It's 503-847-9774. 503-847-9774. Because sometimes like you call a number and you don't, you're hoping they won't pick up. We won't. We're on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Ryan J. Lane gave us our theme music. Hurtbird gave us our headlines. I missed the whole thing there. Sorry. Ryan J. Lane at Bandcamp. RyanJLane.bandcamp.com. And Hurtbird is at HurtbirdMusic.com. This is the end of everything. Goodbye. We will talk to you later.
Bye.
Why don't I start with you? You give me and yeah, it's clean, by the way. It's, okay. It's made from an old sock, but it's been washed.
I know. It's like a nice wool sock.
Here. This is the shittiest mic I have. It's
way to make him feel welcome.
Yeah, I guess free beer. I mean, that's the
right. Yeah, exactly. And there's more to make up for the shitty microphone. So.
Cool.
And Brandon, who has not talked into a microphone for a while.
Yes. Zach Galifianakis.
Perfect. For old time's sake.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. That looks good.
This is the cable. I think it's
done. I'm going to replace that sometime soon. Yeah, it's got some shorting issues and whatnot.
Works for the time being.
Exactly.
128, that's 8-bit, isn't it? So.
Oh, it is. Yeah,
this is your
that's right.
8-bit anniversary.
Yeah. 8-bit anniversary.